From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Noel is on adventures.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Paul Deccant. Most importantly, you are you and you are here. And that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Matt, at the top of the show.
Okay.
Here we are. I have to say thank you for bringing this episode to fruition because you and I have talked in previous shows about UFO sightings.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. One of the most fascinating things that I think can occur in this world.
Mm-hmm. And over the years, we've covered various aspects of it, and we've often found we've often found people who will attempt to explain a genre of sighting, like a type of sighting, or will attempt to explain a single incident. But what's fascinating and startling to both of us, I believe, is that even in the modern day, there are so many huge sightings that have been sort of lost to history. You may be listening now and you may think, I vaguely recall hearing something about something like a specific incident, but too often we lose the details, and too often we, as a civilization, forget to investigate the actual nuts and bolts, the specifics, the timelines, the what happened and when.
Yeah, absolutely. And the most fascinating genre within the UFO sighting of that type, for me, at least, is the mass sighting, where it's not just, you know, a small group of people, like a family or something that saw something. Something like the Phoenix Lights, where there's almost an entire town that has this sighting at one time. Or something like what we're going to discuss today. And we have someone very special on the show today who is currently directing and producing an entire film, a documentary, about one particular UFO sighting and encounter. And his name is Randall Nickerson. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate being here.
Well, thank you for being on the show with us. Come on.
Currently, as we speak, there are questions that remain about a specific mass sighting of an unidentified flying object in 1994 in Zimbabwe at a place called the Aerial School. Could you tell us and the listeners just a little bit about the gist of this, what people usually mean when they refer to this phenomenon?
It was an event that took place in 1994 at the Aerial School in a rural area of Zimbabwe in Africa, where a schoolyard of children had seen this craft of some kind, silver, that had come down and set down in the back of the schoolyard about 150, 200 yards back, and they saw these creatures in black that got came out of this object and had some of them, many of them, had eye contact with it, and it one of them, at least one, had approached the playground. There were other witnesses, also adults, that had witnessed either the object itself in the sky. There was a lot of anomalies at the time also, but the main incident seemed to be this school in Zimbabwe.
So these are students that were outside and they experienced something. How old are these kids that saw this thing, and roughly how many of them were there?
Well, there were, it was a schoolyard of children between the ages of 6 and 13. The number of children that drew drawings had the headmaster of the school had after the incident happened, and they were the children were all shook up. And initially, the children were not believed by the teachers or the headmaster. But after they had gone home to their parents and shared the story with their parents with their appropriate emotional impact and all that, the headmaster had them come back and draw what they saw. So there were 60 drawings made, mm-hmm. but through the research and meeting a lot of these people, there were quite a few more than that.
So that's a fascinating point then, because it sounds like the 60 plus children we're talking about and the drawings, these all are only the witnesses and the depictions of which we're currently aware. There's one interesting thing we found here, which is that in the aftermath of the sighting, the children were interviewed by the BBC bureau chief for Zimbabwe. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. He was the first one to interview the children. He was the first person with a camera. And he happened to be with with the BBC to show up at the school and actually start asking questions.
What did with that initial reporting? You know, a lot of times when UFO sightings make the news, it's almost in a joking way, or there's a bit of it's not looked at with really any type of seriousness. Even in 1994, perhaps. Especially in 1994, how was it treated when it initially hit the news?
It was treated similarly, that it wasn't taken seriously in the beginning. I think the BBC reporter didn't take it seriously. He was trying to, when he was interviewing these children, he's like, are you sure it wasn't a helicopter? Are you sure it wasn't, normal standard things?
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a lot of skepticism. By everybody, the teachers, the parents, to the whole event. It was difficult for the witnesses, which I think after meeting a lot of other witnesses from other incidents around the world that involve, UFOs or unidentified aerial phenomena, it's hard for people to find a place where they can actually share their experience.
Yeah, and one thing that's fascinating about the timeline here with this sighting in particular is while many mass media outlets so often, as you and Matt pointed out, so often treat these reports with anywhere from skepticism to a dismissive tone, this story did not disappear. In fact, Harvard psychiatrist Dr. John Mack became involved, correct?
That's true. Yes, he was called by the BBC reporter to, because the BBC reporter felt like he was way out of his territory and needed more professional guidance. Dr. John Mack, he's a Harvard psychiatrist. He had won the Pulitzer Prize. He had, spent 20 years as a child psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and so he had a lot of experience with children. And he traveled to Zimbabwe to investigate this incident, and was very interested in seeing what its legitimacy was, if it was legitimate, and what that meant. He was looking into, at that time, UFO reports and witnesses, and he, at that point, was starting to look globally, not just about incidents in the United States, but incidents in South America, Africa, European countries, to see how widespread the phenomenon was, because Dr. Mack had started to take it seriously after he had met I think about 10 witnesses that he was introduced to in his, he, when Dr. Mack first approached this, he thought that this was some kind of psychiatric phenomena, some kind of psychiatric, that it was coming from the person, not an external actual reality. But when he started to meet people that he put through psychological screening tests, he found that they were telling a story that was had all the earmarks of real experience. I think this whole phenomena is, I think generally the public is not highly educated about things that are normal, astronomical events. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because there are a lot of reports that are just, everyday objects that astronomers know or other people are aware of, that specialize in those fields. But there's a lot that we don't know. There's been many studies about the unidentified aerial phenomena that show, out of all the reports, probably 5% are legitimate mysteries, because largely the general public is not educated in a way to know, what occurs normally in the sky. Astronomers know, people that spend a lot of time out at in the environments at night or educated in that department to know when, if it's Venus rising on the horizon or setting on the horizon, and or some other objects, fireballs or space debris. There's so many different things that can be misidentified. Mm-hmm. And be a shock to somebody who's never seen them or isn't aware of STA, ISS, the space station, when it crosses over. It's a pretty amazing sight. So I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's important that, that there are reports that, a lot of them that are just can be relegated to things that are just normal, things that just happen. But then there's that 5%, which is what interests anybody looking into this, that are truly legitimate.
I'm really glad you talked about that, because a lot of writing I've seen online about this, just commenting, anyone who has an internet connection can comment now on anything. And some of the more derisive comments I've seen about this particular event are about, hey, these are kids. These are kids who saw something. They were probably making stuff up. Maybe they just saw something and they are all, it was a helicopter or something, and they decided to make a game out of it. In particular, these are well-spoken kids. You got your hands on the documentary, all of the footage, basically, the news footage, and you're using it to craft your documentary. Can you talk to us a little bit about just what these kids sound like, what it's, they sound credible, just to me sitting here watching a trailer for the aerial phenomena. But talk to me about being immersed in that just for as long as you have been. What are these kids like?
They're highly intelligent, all of them. The school itself is a Christian school still. They're very highly educated children, and partly due to the teaching staff and how much love and care they give their students. Being immersed in it and meeting these children as adults has been, it's been a really beautiful experience, just on a personal level, like meeting just another person, but they actually happen to have a story that I'm interested in. And seeing, I guess part of it, people will say, well, why, these kids may have made something up, or I just find that really difficult to believe, because I have all the archival of, they've been interviewed half a dozen times by, several different news outlets and reporters, you know, when it happened, immediately after it happened. And the consistency in those reports is just riveting. It's fascinating just on that level, the consistency that children that young can tell the same story from their own perspective that, you know, corroborates every other one. And they're not like getting together. I haven't seen that where they're getting together and, you know, coming up with something or, you know, that doesn't seem to be that way. And as adults, they still think of that day out of any day in their life, what happened on that day. It's fresh to them. So I went through my own struggle of like, well, did this happen or did this not happen? What are the other possible explanations for this? And, but I've over time become pretty convinced that something really occurred there. And it comes through small details that, even as some of the adults remember that they don't even know about the archival that I have, but they'll mention something, you know, as adults now that they don't even know about that I have in the archival from some other child who mentions that detail. It's that kind of thing where there's a lot of corroborating evidence, I guess you could say. That would be the word that speaks to the validity that this occurred. And it wasn't like a normal event, you know. It wasn't like a typical UFO thing that they could have read out of a book. It was very, very different than the standard, you know, or I don't know if there's a standard encounter, but you know, what others have run into. It was a very unique encounter with whatever this intelligence is.
And this is a tremendous point that you have hit upon, and it's one of the first questions that a lot of people who consider themselves more on the skeptical end of the spectrum will have. The idea of children reporting stories leads into the concept of kids, without meaning to be misleading, manufacturing memories or getting details wrong. And so it's tremendously important to emphasize that in this case, the children's details, I love how you point out that the details are one of the things that really, really set you on a path of discovery here, because we can always, as human beings, misremember things or get things wrong. But if multiple people are having the same accounts, and if they have come to these accounts through their own experiences, you know, they are not, as you said, getting together off camera or something and making sure their stories match. If they are all reporting from their own perspective a similar or identical event, then it builds a much stronger case. And an additional thing that I know all of us out in the audience are wondering is something that came about as we were exploring the communication with the children, or should we say the former children who were involved, because they are now, as you said, they're adults, right, in their 20s or 30s. And now that there's this time that has passed, I feel like there's part of the story we also need to explore here, which is your part, Randall. How did you become involved in this investigation? How did you become the documentarian who is exploring this event and bringing it to the world?
Well, I started actually September 11th. I was down in New York City, two blocks away from the World Trade Center when the building two came down. And that was kind of my inspiration to get into film and tell stories, you know, share real stories, because that was a very real event for me. And like everybody, struck everybody in a way that probably made most people make changes in their lives. And I started making short films, and one was on the value of silence and listening in the world, community, personal relationships, therapeutic relationships. And I had showed it to a friend of Dr. John Mack's, and she had asked me if I was interested in making a film about this Zimbabwe case. And I said, sure. And I was very fascinated just seeing the children being interviewed. I'm like, my first impression, I think everybody sees that, is that they're telling the truth. What they saw or whatever, I didn't know at the time, like, exactly what that truth was, but they were telling the truth. It felt honest and truthful. And, you know, I was originally supposed to make a 30-minute DVD for the John Mack Institute. And I felt like that John Mack's material was very good, but I felt like there had to be more to the story. I wanted to know more. I wanted to know more about, well, were there other sources that I can compare his interviews to, you know, to see where he was coming from, where the kids were, if the story was consistent. So I found the school back in 2008, and as soon as I found it, and that came through a reporter in South Africa, I immediately went there and discovered a whole bunch of different things, that the BBC was there, and then there was a big hunt to find that reporter and to get his archival footage and I continued to do this for years to find all the archival, because that to me was important. If I could compare Dr. Mack's footage with all the other people that had interviewed these children, that would convince myself, you know, more so, and be more of a convincing story if the consistency was there, which it was. And so that kind of led me to thinking of it like, this is such an important story, not only about the fact that this happened alone, that some school in rural Africa had this whole encounter, but the story of this Harvard psychiatrist going over there, and then the repercussions he got for dealing with this phenomena at all. So that it's a very, you know, which, you know, at some point I reached a point, it's like, this is a feature documentary. There's just, you can't tell this in a short form or in a small way. This is a really big story. And, you know, I always say, and other people have said it before, I know, is just, you know, these incidents happen all over the globe. Every single country has reports. And if just one of those reports is true, it changes everything. And there's been tens and thousands of reports going back, you know, to the 60s, even before that, 50s and 60s. So I think that's part of the drive that I've had. It's like, well, this is a very important story as a whole for us, you know, as a species on this planet, to understand that, or to start looking at, well, maybe there's something to all this stuff, you know, and if there is, we really should be paying attention to that, because that means that there's a higher order species, something with a higher level of technology than us, that is interacting with us. And then the real concern for me is, well, that means that something else could potentially decide our fate. That concerns me, you know, and that's why I feel like we should know as much as possible. And I hope this subject begins to be taken seriously, because it's important. It's not just important. It's not the wow, UFO, you know, aliens. I don't even care about that. I care about the fact that there is an intelligent species that's more evolved than us, potentially, that could have a huge effect on our direction as us as human beings.
And we're going to pause here just for a moment. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors.
What it brought to my mind is a clip from one of the little girls who was being interviewed, I believe, by John Mack. And she said something to the effect of the being communicated a message to her. And I think it was John that was trying to get her to talk more about how the being communicated to her. And she ended up saying something that there was a message, a very specific message. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah. Several of the children reported when they were in close contact with this one being, or there was another one that reported too. But during that, there was an intense connection between the kids at the playground and the being that approached them. And during that moment, and all the kids say it was like time just stopped, but several of the kids got this sort of, I don't know how it was, they didn't know how to explain how it was communicated, but you know, you and I would know that as telepathy, you know, something that was transferred mind to mind. And the message was about our own environment. And several, not the majority of the witnesses, but several of them, at least a half a dozen, maybe more, because a lot of them in the present day are not, they feel a little nervous to share that. But the message was about what we were doing to our planet, or what our direction was with our own environment. I don't know. I wonder about that a little bit. I wonder, well, if somebody sees something traumatic, you tend to think about, you know, particularly something from out of this world, that may be a response to a trauma. I mean, you may think about your own place more. I'm just thinking of alternative reasons why that would come out, or it really happened, you know, or it was really communicated to these kids. And then the question is why.
In the footage, Randall, he's, you know, I think it's Dr. Mack, and he's saying, you know, repeatedly saying, well, did you think about this before? Is this a thought you've had before? Why did you think about this? And he would allow for more questions in between. Then he would ask her again, is this something you were thinking about, or that, you know, you've been taught or told? And just repeatedly, she'd be like, no, I didn't think about it until I got home and afterwards.
Yeah. And one thing I'd like to go back to as we're talking about the kids' accounts is something that I know has piqued the interest of a lot of our listeners here, and that is that the event as described by, again, these more than 60 school children has aspects that do not match the, you know, the stereotypical UFO encounter story that we have heard, right? You said there were some unique things that occurred and that the kids pretty much universally agreed on some of these things. We've also heard some reports that there were some small differences in children's accounts. But what set this apart in your mind from the typical – I hesitate to use the phrase typical, but the super familiar stereotypical UFO encounter story? Like, what really stood out?
I think what really stood out, well, number one was the fact that they – showed up at a playground at a primary school is one big one. Mm-hmm. And sort of from all the reports were, it seemed to be to have approached the playground and observed the children. There was no action taken. There was no, you know, nobody was taken or anything there, you know, it was almost like an observation. That I find really interesting. The other thing that's unique is that they were all wearing black, like a black skin tight suit, these creatures. And there's only, I think, three times in the history of this phenomena that's been reported. So that was unique. the message part is not, some of the research I've done with other cases, that's not terribly uncommon, that people that have had encounters with these things get some kind of message about our own environment and our own direction as a species. So I think, those are the two big things that stand out for me are where it took place, how it took place, and what they were particularly wearing.
Ah, I see.
It made it unique. And of course, the message transmission and all that also.
Oh, and we should point out, most importantly, not only was this on a playground, but this was also, and this will seem unusual to many people, this was during the day, during a school day, I believe it was their mid-morning break at 10 a.m. or something?
Yeah, thank you for reminding me that. That's what also makes it unique.
Yeah,
yeah,
10 a.m.
very good. It happened at the 10:30 break in the morning on a Friday, and that also is unique.
So I want to bring something up here, Randall. It's a point of contention that I've seen online. I just want to talk about it. Let's just go there. Okay. I have heard some people suggest that perhaps this was an elaborate prank by some of the teachers because of a few things. Most of the teachers were in a meeting at the time, or at least I think they were having a teacher's meeting of some sort. There was one teacher perhaps outside that was manning basically a snack stand kind of thing.
That's correct, yeah.
And then it's been posited before that perhaps the teachers were having fun with the kids and trying to do something in that way. And it's been done before. It's been done afterwards where teachers have faked an invasion for the kids and then they reveal it later.
Really?
Just in your mind, is there any possibility that something to that effect occurred that day?
I've seen those reports of teachers doing this sort of fake UFO thing. That started happening, I think, in the 2008, 2009, sort of. But the kids were aware of it. I mean, it wasn't something they, the teachers pranked them on. But I don't find any. I mean, I've talked to all the teachers, and they were shocked themselves. They didn't know how to deal with it. So I there's no validity to that this is none. I mean, I've interviewed all the teachers. I have all the teachers interviewed at the time. There's just no way I can even see that as a possibility. It's just not there. Mainly because the teachers were shocked. I mean, they didn't believe the kids. They, not all of them, but many of the teachers initially did not believe the kids until the kids' parents started showing up and saying, look, something happened to my kid. What happened? You know? And then it got, taken more seriously by the staff and the headmaster. And they became really convinced that something had occurred. You know, it's a tough subject. I mean, they were all of a sudden, all the teachers were put in a position of, okay, these children are reporting this, but we don't believe this. And, you know, it goes to, I don't find any validity to that argument at all. I found nothing there. And I've looked at that. I've looked at hoaxes, you know, and you have to, I got to say, I don't think enough people do this in the UFO field or the unidentified aerial phenomena field. You got to look at everything, you know. You can't take a report as just the way it is, you know. Like, I looked at everything, like what was going on with the teachers, what was going on in the country with their military, with, you know, what was going on in space at the time. You got to, and where was the sun rising that day? What was the, at night, what was the, where was Venus? I mean, you, all these questions you need to ask to get a thorough take on something and I think it's really important. I don't think enough people do that. And the other thing, like with the teachers, these children coming to the teachers had a certain worldview, and this is a lot of things John Mack talks about and others like that. And this is what really this whole phenomena is about, really, is that, you know, is our worldview, you know, that these things aren't supposed to exist. They're not real. They don't exist. So most of the teachers were in that worldview, and they were approached by the children and being challenged in a big way from them by saying, no, this is what we saw. But the worldview, like for all of us, is, you know, most of us have this worldview that there's nothing more than intelligent than us. And we like to keep that worldview because it makes us feel good, makes us continue to want to do things.
Of course.
But there's different worldviews. Like in Africa, people in the native populations, they don't have the same worldview. They are open to understanding that, yeah, we're the dominant species here, or we think we are. But there are other species out in this vast ocean that we look at night. Love stars. So I just think that our worldviews is what's being challenged with this whole phenomena. Like, it's something we really don't want to look at because it challenges our ego, really.
Well, you know, this just brings up so much that I've been reading recently because of this interview about Dr. John E. Mack. And honestly, I didn't know a whole lot about this gentleman. And we've discussed before that he has a PhD from the Harvard School of Medicine, and he's a psychologist, psychoanalyst. He is also a self-described parapsychologist and has done some fascinating work in that field. And for someone with such accolades and such an education and just a brilliant person to immerse himself in that field that is so socially, I would say, maligned, maybe socially mm-hmm. unaccepted.
Mm-hmm. Controversial, at least.
Yes, correct. For to have someone like this look into this whole phenomena, this one event, and then to have that group seek you out to produce a documentary on this subject. It's just, it lends such credibility to it. I don't know. I think that's one of the main reasons why I personally am so excited about this documentary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not just the resources, but because there is this, this man who then kind of became an institution. Can you tell us a little bit about how, like you mentioned something about repercussions with John E. Mack
mm-hmm.
For his beliefs and kind of what we've been talking about here. What happened? What were those repercussions?
I mean, John Mack was brilliant. And I think, he had won the Pulitzer Prize in, I believe it was 1977. He was brilliant as a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst. And I think what happened, this is my take, that he got bored with, you know, the standard model of looking at a person in a therapeutic environment, and got very interested in anomalous experiences that people didn't, you know, extraordinary experiences that were difficult to believe. And I think he was looking at different models of psychotherapy to explore the unconscious. He had dealt with people who had near-death experiences and witnesses to UFOs or aliens, and being such a high-level person, I mean, he started the Cambridge Hospital. He was a psychiatrist at the Harvard Medical School, a professor, and he started to get flack from the university for his looking into these cases. And the repercussions, they really went after him. They were threatening to take away his tenure and basically fire him, which has never in the history of Harvard University been done. There's never been a person threatened like that in the whole entire history of Harvard. And that goes back to the late 1600s. So it was real. That was very unique. And they, you know, it was a whole, not a trial, but essentially one behind closed doors. And, you know, their concern was that he was, you know, that these patients actually had psychological illnesses, yet they displayed none of them. But that was their angle, that the concern for patients, and which is understandably, I could totally understand their angle. But honestly, my take on it now is I felt like they were really trying to tarnish his reputation.
And intimidate him, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he had lied, you know, through this whole Harvard Inquisition, which was had many people involved, including Alan Dershowitz, and, you know, it's just a cast of some famous people. And, you know, that he had lost his circle of friends at Harvard. Nobody wanted to be around him, you know, during this time. And so I think the Harvard, it really achieved a goal in sort of just, you know, hurting his credibility.
Hmm.
So it's quite a hero's journey in a way. I mean, it was the man, a man who was, had a conviction that these people are telling the truth. You know, different people that are reported, including these children in Africa, they're telling the truth. And what does that mean? Asking the question of what does that mean if this is the truth and this is not something psychological, what does that mean for us as a species?
And we're going to take a quick break. We're just going to pause. We'll be right back.
Regardless of how someone encounters this story or what they personally believe, right, the crux of the issue is the following. There are things that have yet to be explained about this event, which was not that long ago. I mean, maybe we're dating ourselves a little bit here, but 1994 is, it's the past, but it's relatively recent. And there are still things that we can find out through rigorous investigation, through on-the-ground interviews, through the work that you are doing. But all of it leads us to, again, the question you just posited, which is, what does this mean? What does this mean for the future? What will humanity overall discover from this event? And, you know, we haven't touched on the other events across the world that you have mentioned, that you alluded to, that have some of the same threads running through them, right? So this is a question that we, at least, I don't know if you've got something up your sleeve, Matt, but this is a question that we don't have the answer to yet, at least us.
There's some stuff in here, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's answers to that question, though.
Ah, well, what we would like to do is, I guess our next question for the show here then is to ask if you could tell us a little more about the state of the documentary as it stands now, what our listeners can do to help, and where they can learn more about the piece.
Sure. Can I say one thing first?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So during this filming and interviewing, I mean, I've traveled to Africa 3 times and all over Europe, finding all these witnesses in the United States, Canada. You know, I've been approached by several people, you know, dozens and dozens of people that have heard I'm doing a movie about UFOs, and they come and they share their experience with me. And, you know, and these are people, this is what always strikes me. They're people that have, I mean, they come to me and they say, don't tell anybody because I haven't told anybody or they've only told their immediate family, and they share these stories that nobody knows about. They keep it to themselves. They're afraid of ridicule. They're afraid of, you know, they're afraid of a lot of things for it somehow to go public, afraid of losing their friends, all kinds of fears. Yet their stories are, you know, they sound and their feelings express something really happened. I just find that heartbreaking in a way that there's this whole culture out there that is not being heard, that you don't see at UFO conferences, that you don't see anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They've just had these experiences and they're keeping it to themselves. Just considering the number that I've run into and just doing the math of how many people there has to be like that, it's a lot of people that could be helping us solve this mystery. And there just doesn't seem to be enough of a drive from us or our media or our culture to really want to find out what's going on here. 'Cause I think it's pretty important that we do try to understand it and try to find out more. 'Cause as far as I want to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what situation humanity's in. Like, I want to know that if there's something out there, I really want to know about it. I want to know how it can impact me. I want to know what I should be afraid of or need to be afraid of. I don't know. I just, or not. But I would like as much information as possible. I know about all the wildlife that live in the forest that I'm in. And I'm very curious, you know, to find out a lot about them. If there's something else out there, it's another form of wildlife, just happens to be smarter than us. I want to know as much as possible, particularly because it's smarter than me. So I don't know. It just strikes me that I'll be glad when the day comes, and it will come, when universities have programs that are really doing intense research about this. You know, and eliminating the charlatans and whatever, the BS stories that are out there, and getting to the real stories and piecing this puzzle together, because we need to know.
Agreed.
Okay, Randall, so tell us how we can learn more about the Aerial Phenomenon documentary. Where can we learn about it? Where can we watch a trailer for it? When do you think it's coming out? Just tell us everything.
Okay, so the film, we're at a rough cut right now, working toward a final. It's fantastic. I mean, I can't say enough. And I wouldn't usually be that. I'm just really excited because it's taken a long time, but I've done it right. I've gotten some of the best people to work on it. I've got an editor that worked with Michael Moore, did Fahrenheit 9/11, did Sicko, and has done other brilliant films. So I've gotten really great people to work on it, and we're working toward a final. You can check it out at aerialphenomenon.com. We have a trailer there, and we have a trailer where Dan Aykroyd plugs the film, and he's very aware of this case, and he was just wonderful supporting just trying to get the word about this film out there. But you can see quite a bit of information on the site. We're still taking donations because it's been, you know, it's been a project from the heart kind of thing. And it's been up and down. You know, we get funding and then the funding stops. And then I go back to work to pay for more filmmaking or more editing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been hard to, you know, when you don't have the funding right there and you have to play all these roles to keep it moving. And sometimes the production stops and then we move ahead again. And then it stops again. Anyway, it's been a challenge for sure. But, we're looking at, for being at, a final within 3 months. So it's coming soon. And I think the reaction, because the other thing, this is not really a film about UFOs in a sense. I mean, it is a film about this incident, but it's a lot also about what happens to people, you know, what people go through when they have reported something like this, and how it sticks with them. And that's, it's kind of a lot of different things, but it's not your traditional, by any sense, UFO film at all. It's very mainstream as far as a story. And, it's really a lot about the people, you know, not so much about the aliens or the woo-woo stuff about UFOs. And I kind of think that's where the conversation needs to go, is in us getting out sort of out of the woo-woo flash, like aliens stage to, okay, well, you know, what are we looking at here? What is it? You know, if it's an alien or some other creature from another planet, it's another animal, basically. You know what I mean? So I think it would be, I really would like to work toward changing the conversation to, so we can get to it, so we can really get to the heart of this matter issue and learn from it, find out what it is. And, you know, the recent things that have happened that came out in the New York Times, with the military was mm-hmm. absolutely fascinating. I don't know if you guys are aware of that.
Yeah, yeah. We just did a couple interviews about that recently.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Pentagon Advanced Aviation Threat Identification Program, mm-hmm. I believe, with Luis Elizondo. Yeah, that was a massive surprise to, I think, everybody who even casually follows this sort of news.
Yeah.
What an about face, yeah. You know?
There's a dude named Jeremy Corbell that we talked to recently about that.
Oh, I just met him. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Oh, great.
Fascinating guy. Well, okay, look, Randall, I, like many people listening right now, am very excited to watch the aerial phenomena. I know Ben is too.
Yeah.
See it in his eyes.
We'll go ahead and also post the trailer that you can find. When you're done with this podcast, you can check it out on our Instagram, our Facebook, and our Twitter.
Yeah, we'll put that out there now. By the way, we are Conspiracy Stuff at Twitter and Facebook, and Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram if you're out there and you want to, you know, discuss this project further. And again, go to Ariel, that's A-R-I-E-L, phenomenon.com.
Yeah, and there you can find more information about the documentary. You can watch the trailer. You can see some of the news. You can also contact the project directly with questions. And, you know, one thing that I think everyone listening should absolutely take away from this episode is a point that you brought up, Randall, that there are so many people that you have met who feel that they have experienced something that would that they are unable to communicate with the world because of fear of social repercussions, right?
Yes.
Or a social stigma with that. And the most one of the most important things to remember here is that if you are listening and you feel that some sort of event has happened to you, if you feel that you do not have a voice regarding this or that you do not have the ability to share it, the good news is
we exist.
Well, the good news is that you are, you know, that you are not existing in isolation. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people around the globe who have experienced something that they feel they may not be able to explain. And it is very important to remember that no person exists in isolation. And depending on what people may ultimately find out about the aerial phenomenon and other sightings of this kind, perhaps our species also is not an island and does not exist in isolation. I'm waxing a little poetic. I apologize, guys. Okay. I apologize.
I'm glad you said that, though. I think that's really important that people don't feel alone, you know? Because the people I've met, it's hard. That's what makes it hard. You know, it just sits in themselves alone. And all kinds of things can happen from that place.
Yeah.
Yep.
So thank you so much, Randall, for joining us today for this. And thank you for all the work you're doing on, you know, this project. We're very excited to see it, and we can't wait to see how it turns out. And, you know, if you wanted to send us maybe a screener or something. I'm saying Ben and I are here, and you know,
you're doing the hard sell. Matt. Well, in all seriousness, yes, thank you so much for your time, both on our behalf and on behalf of our fellow listeners out there in the audience. And if you are listening and thinking, I have a story to communicate, I would like to tell somebody, I know something that I haven't shared with the world yet, you, of course, can reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. You are the most important part of this show. Go ahead and send us a missive, a communique on your social media platform of choice. Or if none of that is your steam,
you can call us.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
1-833-STDWYTK.
And if there's one other method of communication you prefer above all others, if that is email, you are in luck. You can contact us directly. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.